You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
If you've been thinking about getting serious with your money, like actually serious, now's the time. The Motley Fool is offering new members 50% off their iconic stock recommendation service, Stock Advisor. This is the same service that's crushed the market with recommendations that have returned 1,057% since inception, compared to the S&P 500's 180% over that same period. This isn't guesswork. The Motley Fool has a track record of finding companies before they become household names. So if you want to invest smarter and you like saving money while doing it, go to fool.com/listen to claim your 50% off discount off a 1-year term of Stock Advisor. Again, that's fool.com/listen. Returns of 1,057% are from the Motley Fool's product Stock Advisor and measured against S&P 500 returns of 180% as of July 10th, 2025. Past performance is not an indicator of future results. All investing involves a risk of loss. Individual investment results may vary.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 778. It's the 17th of May, 2017. A lot of sevens in there. On the podcast today, Tim McCarthy, chairman of Immu Pharma, that's IMM, and Tim gives an update on its lead compound, Lupizor, in its pivotal Phase 3 study. Also on the podcast, Phalanx Group CEO Stuart Bladen and director Jay Abbott discuss the recent ransomware cyber attacks on the NHS. I also have Eric Burns, deputy head of institutional research at WH Ireland, and Eric talks about the recent cyber attack, also discusses some companies that will give you some exposure to the growing cyber protection market. As always, I also have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours and the top five most liked RNSs on the platform in the last 24 hours too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Tim McCarthy, chairman of Immu Pharma. The ticker there is IMM. Tim, thanks for coming on.
You're very welcome, Justin.
Now, you've released an update to the market on Lupizor today, and we'll go through that in more detail in a bit. But as always, for people not aware of what you're all about there at Immu Pharma, Tim, could you give a brief summary as to your business, please?
Yes, of course. We're a drug development company. We're listed on AIM, have been for about 11 years now. And the company is mostly known for its lead drug development program, which is a drug called Lupizor for the treatment of an autoimmune disease called lupus, which mainly affects women. And that's in a phase 3 study. And today we put out an update on that study, which I'm sure we'll go on to discuss. I think there's a lot of excitement around that program as well. So, I'm happy to give you an update on it, actually.
Yeah, and just to put it in context, as far as lupus is concerned, what proportion of the population, what potential is here if this becomes commercial, this drug?
Well, as I just said, it's a disease, an autoimmune disease, which mainly affects women and non-Caucasian women as it happens. The incidence across the world is about 5 million patients. And if I narrow that down into what we call the sort of well-developed pharmaceutical markets, which from a commercial perspective is important, they're about 1.5 to 2 million. So that's United States, Europe, Japan. But it's a disease, unfortunately, which is not very well served. So we call it an unmet medical need. In other words, there aren't sufficient or effective drugs on the market for the condition. And it's very debilitating for patients, unfortunately. And once a patient has the disease, it's a lifelong thing. And it can be very debilitating in the sense that it stops them living their normal life. If they've got it severe enough, they can't really hold down a job. So if we can offer relief and or treatment to these patients, it'll be a major breakthrough, major breakthrough.
Okay, so the update, like you said, you are in a pivotal phase 3 study right now, and you gave an update to the market. Could you take us through some of the key points, if you could, Tim?
Of course. This is a study on 200 patients in the study, which are being given the drug for 1 year in total. So they get once a month injection. They go into the doctor's surgery, and it's a little bit like going for travel vaccination. So it's just what we call a subcutaneous injection in the top of the arm. So it's not painful at all, very quick. And what we've put an update out on today is just progress on the study. So the last update was about 3 months ago. And today what we've confirmed is that everything's on track. All the 200 patients are getting through the study at various stages, because as you'll appreciate, we recruit these patients over a period of time. So the first patient recruited has already completed their 12 months, and the last patient completed is obviously still, the last patient recruited is still running through the study. So what we've done today is just put into context how many patients have got through various stages of the study. Mm-hmm. There are a certain number that have already completed, as I say, but the most important message, there's two important messages from today, I think.
Yeah.
One is that all of the patients, all 200, have now passed the three-month stage of the study. Mm-hmm. And in fact, we've got over 80% that passed through 6 months. And that's important because the product profile is that it's effective, or efficacious, as we call it, so it will treat the symptoms, but also that it's not displaying at the moment, certainly in our earlier studies and what we've seen to date in this study, it's not showing any side effect profile, and that's very important. And the reason why we're majoring on the fact that all of the patients have got through the 3 months, is the fact that the phase two study was only exposure in patients for 3 months, which is what you'd expect in a phase two study.
Yeah.
A phase three is about getting more exposure to more patients and over a longer period of time. So the fact that we've got to this stage with this many patients through the 3 months and then actually the 6 months with still a very robust side effect profile is very, very encouraging in terms of product profile, because it's, as I say, the longest exposure that any patients have had for this drug before.
Yeah. And I was going to say that, and also, I mean, I'm sure shareholders in the market appreciate these kind of updates, because it's obviously you can only reveal so much because you only have so much information, and the data readouts isn't yet. But I see the market does appreciate it today because your stock price is up there, but you must find it quite important as well to give this update to market and shareholders, do you?
Well, we do, and we have a shareholder and general corporate communications policy, which is of transparency and keeping in touch, certainly with their shareholders, but the investor market as a whole. And it's about telling the investor community what we can when we can. Now, clearly, there's only so much we can say and only so much we know about this study, because it's being run under normal clinical trial protocols, which means that it's a blinded study and it's placebo-controlled and randomized. So what all that means is that the 200 patients are split into two arms. So 100 take the active drug and 100 take placebo. And we do that such that we can see comparison between the two and ensure that the drug is being effective in its own use compared to a placebo. So you get a real result. The fact that it's randomized and double blind means that neither the doctor nor the patient who's taking the drug know whether they're taking the active or the placebo, which again means that you get a result which is real. And so we don't know, neither the doctor knows nor the patient knows which of these patients are getting the drug or the active or the placebo, and we won't know until early next year when the study completes. And that was the other message in the news release today, that we're confirming that the results should be out in the first quarter next year, 2018, so bang on track. And when we get those results, then it's only then that we will unblind the study. In other words, reveal who's been on placebo, who's been on active, and then we can see what the real result is. But what we can see as we go through the study without unblinding anything, you know, if there are any issues in terms of safety, then we would know about it and we'd have to tell the market. And, you know, what we're saying is everything's looking really good at the moment. Really,
yes, good. So that's good. I mean, as it seems to be going all to plan, which is very good. And just to reiterate, so you're on track. There's 200 patients now successfully recruited, and obviously patients are in different periods this cycle here. So you say you're going to finish what, by the end of the year, and top line results in what, Q1 next year, is it?
Top line results in Q1 next year. Yes, so approximately 9 months away. Which is not actually a very long time.
No.
And, you know, we will continue to give updates on the study in a similar way that we have today, just to keep the market informed and hopefully keep giving the same message that everything's on track. There's no reason that I can see that it won't be on track. You know, everything is looking really, really good at the moment. So we're delighted.
Yeah,
delighted.
Absolutely. Okay, brilliant stuff, Tim. Well, listen, if anyone's listening and they like the sound of this, and you know, they're not following you on Vox Markets, could you give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button, please?
Of course. From an investment perspective, what we're talking about is a company that is valued at less than £80 million today, but with ownership, 100% ownership of a very late stage development drug, i.e. Lupercal, which we just talked about, which in itself has multi-billion dollar sales potential going into a market where there is a high unmet medical need. And if that all translates next year following the results, then 80 million market cap is going to seem pretty minimal. So that's the key messages I want to get across from an investment perspective. From a patient perspective, you know, we are very, very hopeful that we can launch a drug which will help all those patients worldwide. And if we can, then I would be delighted from that perspective, frankly.
Yeah, and as far as I don't know if you know much about this, but let's say it goes through, you get the results out there, and they conform to what you think, and you're very happy with the results. So what would be the process then, Tim, from then on in?
Well, there would be a dual process, really, because one, we need to go through the final regulatory hurdles in terms of talking to the FDA, who's the regulator in the US, and sharing the results with the FDA, and then going through that whole sort of registration approval process. But then on the commercial side, you know, we need to obviously put in place our commercial strategy in terms of how do we get the product to market and how do we commercialize it and monetize it. So both of those things will run in parallel. I mean, on the commercial side, you know, we've got a lot of interest in the drug already.
Yeah.
So, you know, we are progressing that quite separately, but certainly from a regulatory side, then we need the results next year to get moving on that. Yeah,
we could say this time next year, then you know, if everything goes to plan, I don't think you'll be at, like you say, a sub 80 million market cap.
I don't think so, and well, not even this time next year. I mean, I think as soon as we get the results out, fingers crossed they're positive, and we're obviously very, very confident in the company. Then, you know, we're talking first quarter, so it's very exciting.
Tim, it's good to chat to you, and like I say, we'll chat again in the not too distant future. Thank you very much.
I'm sure we will. Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Stuart Bladen, CEO, and Jay Abbott, Executive Director of Phalanx Group. That's FLX ticker. Guys, thank you for joining me.
Good morning, Justin. Nice to talk to you and your listeners again.
Yeah, and your share price has risen in the last few days, and no surprise really, because we've had this massive cyber attack that's been publicised across the world pretty much. I think it's 200,000 to 300,000 companies have been affected. So first and foremost, before we get into this and discuss, you know, how it happened, what people can do, first of all, Stuart, if you can give a brief summary as to what Phalanx is all about, please.
Yeah, sure. So we are a cyber and intelligence company. We do security monitoring. We provide security consulting and advice. And we also provide geopolitical intelligence to help clients manage their risks.
Excellent stuff. Okay, so first and foremost, this bit of ransomware, this cyber attack, what actually happened? Can you explain?
Yeah, sure. So it's known as a WannaCry. We got loads of reports of widespread spreading of the WannaCry ransomware around organizations, initially in the NHS, but actually very, very quickly got notification that it was spreading around the world to more than 150 countries and covering about 200,000 computers that had been attacked. And what happens is that WannaCry encrypts a user's PC and then it demands money, in this case $300, in return for the keys to unlock it.
Okay, and if people don't sort of pay the ransom, what happens then?
Well, after 3 days, the cost of the ransom doubles, and then after 7 days, typically, the key is destroyed and you can never return your files. Now, it's worth saying at the moment that the general advice is not to pay the ransom, and there's really three reasons for doing that. Firstly, as a general principle, payment of ransoms just encourages further attacks, and our experience is that paying the ransom does not guarantee recovery. I think historically they did a survey in Australia that said around about 60 to 70% of people who paid actually even got their files back. But I think particularly in this case, you need to understand that the people who did this are the subject of a global manhunt. They're not going to be sitting around replying to your emails. Your chance, I think, of getting your files back in this case are very, very low indeed.
Okay, and so, yeah, it was widely publicised that, I mean, lots of, like you said, lots of companies around the world were affected by this, but widely reported the NHS. So what was the deal here? Was it the NHS's fault for not keeping themselves up to date, or what?
I don't think so. I think there's two or three things to understand. And one is that the NHS is primarily focused around clinical systems and provision. And some of those provisions have a lifespan that's typically a lot longer than a normal personal computer. And that's part of the issues that they need to manage. Jay, I'd like to introduce Jay, our executive director, who's got a lot of experience in the NHS. Jay, I think you've just published an article on this on LinkedIn.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's worth pointing out as well, the specific attack vector, for lack of a better phrase, or even way this system actually spread, pertained to an unpatched vulnerability. Now, the patch for that vulnerability was only released 2 months ago, which you think, oh, 2 months, that's quite a while. But actually, in patching terms, that's not that long, especially in large heterogeneous network systems such as the NHS, such as large corporate environments. You know, patching cycles can often be 90 days before they're applied because of the actual manpower required to apply so many patches. So, you know, it really was leveraging quite a recent issue. And that issue was actually an NSA issue, an NSA exploit that was released to the public by a hacking group called the Shadow Brokers, and was made available 2 months ago with a whole series of additional attacks. So what we've seen here with WannaCry is the first weaponization of that information that was released into the general public. So it's the first actual weaponization of the tooling. The NHS itself is a prime example of just a huge network. It's got something like a billion endpoints on it. And those billion endpoints are all interconnected with a very high level of trust to each other. So the way this particular attack spread, it would infect a machine and then immediately look on the network for another machine to infect. Well, if you've got a billion endpoints that can pretty much see each other, then, you know, it's very easy for something like that to spread very, very, very quickly. So, you know, the NHS certainly from Friday through the weekend has been full on in terms of remediate, protect, and patch, and there's been a mammoth effort, and I do take my hats off to the IT professionals in the NHS that have worked through their weekend to get clinical systems back online as quickly as they could. They are the unsung heroes of this one, in my mind.
Yeah, and so going forward now, is this, you know, Will this happen again? I mean, is it ultimately preventable? And what can people do to, you know...
Well, I think in the first case, we do expect a series of copycat ransomware attacks. In fact, we've already seen a couple over the weekend. One where they changed a reference inside the code to keep it working, and another where they tried to remove the kill switch that had been found, but the payload no longer worked. So I think what we can expect to see is a bunch of people, at the moment relatively clumsily, trying to exploit a number of these cyber weapons that have been released over the last month or so. Jay, do you want to comment any more on what people can do about that?
Yeah, absolutely. It's worth pointing out that the majority of issues that were released have by the shadow brokers have been patched now. They are available as fixes. We have, you know, sort of been on high alert to our clients stating they really need to get these particular patches over and above any others rolled out because of the likely weaponization. And we've now seen that weaponization. So as a direct result of that, it's very much a case of, you know, please make sure your systems are patched and up to date as possible. Please be cognizant about the information arriving in your inbox. Not all of it is the information you actually asked for. Please, you know, fundamentally keep your eyes open and sort of look for what shouldn't be there is what I would say.
Yeah, you're right there. I mean, 2 months is not a lot. I mean, I've had, my computer updates that I'm meant to do, and I haven't done them for a long time. And I can imagine trying to roll that out over a massive organization is a lot more difficult. Okay, so excellent, guys. So, and it's unfortunate, isn't it, that we have to have situations like this that highlight the issues in cyber defense, you know? And I suppose, you know, if there's a positive, it'll make sure people, you know, update their systems. And also, for you guys, I suppose are you seeing heightened interest now in your company?
Yes, we are. Before we leave the technical subject, we ought to just direct your listeners to the National Cybersecurity Centre, which you can find at ncsc.gov.uk, where you can get the guidance on how to patch for this. I mean, in the long run, what is very clear is that most organisations should now conduct a thorough review of their information security policies, their IT estates, in particular looking at their legacy systems and how well they're isolated, and also check their access to cyber intelligence. So it's not only about responding to this specific event, but actually I think this has raised everyone's awareness this week of a need to beef up their cyber response.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Well, listen, guys, I mean, you know, it's like I said, it's a very hot sector. It's not going to go away. There's going to be continued attacks on people's systems and computers. And if people are listening right now, they think, right, I need some kind of exposure and an investment perspective to a company like yours, but they're not following you. Stuart, can you give us three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page at Vox, please?
So cyber is the hottest market on the planet right now. We've seen that again over the weekend. That's number one. Number two, Phalanx is providing end-to-end security monitoring and advice at exactly the right time. And number three, we've recently announced our new product, Midgard, to help with monitoring. So do give us a call. We're here to help.
Marvellous, guys. Thanks for joining me, and hopefully speak again soon.
Thank you.
Justin, nice to talk to you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Eric Burns, Deputy Head of Institutional Research at WH Ireland. Eric, thanks for coming on.
Pleased to be here, Justin.
And it's always nice of a new face, but I can't see you, but I mean a new voice on the podcast. And so what area are you looking at today? What were we chatting about, Eric?
So a very topical issue. You will have seen over the weekend the rather large outbreak of the WannaCry or WannaCrypt virus, malware, and how it's infiltrated systems across the globe, not just here in the UK, but all around the world.
Yeah, it's ransomware, wasn't it? They encrypt files and then ask for a ransom to get your files back. Is that the case?
That's exactly right. It can be quite disruptive, both to individuals and also particularly corporates, where you will get a rather nasty-looking screen that tells you all your files have been encrypted, And unless you pay a ransom, which of course is payable in Bitcoin, so it has the advantage to the hacker of anonymity and a sort of lack of traceability, you've got to pay the ransom before you can get access to your files, if indeed the hacker comes up with the goods and unlocks your files.
Yeah, I've heard that. I've heard that in a lot of cases, I think close to the majority of cases, that you don't actually get your files back anyway, unencrypted. You just take the money and run. And so, and you know, a lot of people say you should never give in to ransom because it encourages it. But, okay, yeah. So and I think the count now is about, I read a headline somewhere, it's like 300,000 businesses around the world in 150 countries have been affected. So that's a phenomenal amount of... And I suppose what this does, I mean, it's obviously bad, and, you know, it's not a good thing, but I suppose what it does, on a positive side of it, it highlights the need for cybersecurity and for institutions and companies and even small businesses to up their awareness in this area, doesn't it?
Indeed. Every cloud, as they say. You're quite right. You know, we've been asked questions since the weekend about, you know, the sort of stocks that are quoted in London to gain exposure to this. And I think the first thing to say is nobody really has a magic bullet that's going to make this go away or indeed solve the current ransomware attack that's going global at the moment. But what it absolutely does is it brings it onto a much larger popular stage. You know, everybody is now aware, I think, of the need to have appropriate defence in place and appropriate sort of anti-malware systems, not just at a corporate level, but also individually. You know, it will certainly make people think about whether their existing defences are adequate and what steps they should be taking.
Yeah, and I was chatting to the guys, actually, one of the companies you may or may not have mentioned, the Phalanx Group, and they were saying this was a patch that was you know, just released 2 months ago, and if people had updated this patch only 2 months ago, it'd been okay. Yeah. But that's such a short, especially for something like the NHS, got, you know, it takes so long to roll out across all its computers, that, you know, you could be forgiven for saying it wasn't really their fault. They were probably doing their updates while it happened. So, and it's always an ongoing game of cat and mouse here, isn't it? I mean, they'll find a back door somewhere, the cyber attackers, and then it's left to the company to sort of patch that up. And so there'll always be a need for cybersecurity companies. So let's go through some of the ones you can probably get exposure to on the London markets, if you could, Eric.
Yeah, well, I think many people would regard the bellwether of the space as Sophos. And we saw yesterday that stock had quite a decent performance. You know, it's sort of a reasonably well-held stock and, you know, market cap of circa a billion. So that, you know, that's a sort of a first port of call. I mean, in terms of the other stocks, I mean, across the board, pretty much the space went higher yesterday. Mm. One standout was ECSC, which is more of a consultancy SME services business that helps companies deal with the threat. But also a company very much on our radar is an Italian Swiss business that was floated about 18 months ago called Defence, which is a 20 million market cap business. It has many millions of users. It's mainly at the moment sort of direct to the end user, and it really sort of helps combat this threat. So, you know, so that's something that yesterday I think added sort of around about 5 or 6%. I noticed before I came on here, it was a bit stronger again this morning.
Yeah, well, do you know what, Philip Prince, who's the CFO of Defence, actually posted on Vox yesterday, and he said it's the largest ransomware attack to date. And this is not going to be a one-off, is it? You know, so I think, you know, I think every company, because our lives have migrated online, as have businesses, and now, you know, there are businesses out there who couldn't operate unless there was an online presence. So it's going to be you know, a game that's only going to get bigger, isn't it? I think so. Exposure to this area is a good thing, I think, you know, in the portfolio wise.
It is. I mean, one of the flip sides of what's becoming a far more connected environment is that every device that is connected to something has a potential Achilles heel. The opportunity for malware to infect devices or PCs or mobile phones or even the Internet of Things, that's another sort of potential weakness. More and more people doing things like controlling heating and lighting, that itself is not immune from this threat. And you're absolutely right. This threat is not going to go away. The only way of dealing with it is to, make sure sort of at government level, the authorities come down very harshly on the perpetrators of it, but they're still not going to eradicate it. But the only way to deal with it is to make sure that you've got adequate systems and procedures in place to mitigate it as best one can, and two, have a disaster recovery backup plan to deal with it should the worst happen.
Yeah, and I know defence are more so centred in the mobile security area, aren't they?
That is right, yeah. They do have the more traditional PC and laptop solution, but one of the big growth areas for them is in the mobile space. We know that the Android operating system can be susceptible to attack. It's perhaps not as locked down as iOS, but that said, nor is iOS infallible. That's clearly as use of mobile devices grows, that's clearly a sort of a growing market within the cybersecurity industry. Things like mobile are sort of vastly outpacing the growth of the more traditional PC desktop market. The other thing in relation to defence that I think is worth bringing out is, yeah, through their MemoPal business, they have a backup solution. Of course, one of the things, if you have a system that has been infiltrated, one of the ways that you can sort of restore order is if you've been backing up on a regular basis, you can sort of effectively put the clock back, say 24 hours, and get yourself into a position before the malware has attacked the system. So I think as well as the sort of cyber security space, I think it also will highlight an opportunity in cloud backup. Yeah. Because in a worst case scenario, you can actually get your files back. You're not beholden to paying the attacker $100 to get your unlock key.
Yeah, exactly. And do you know what? And it is nice to have that automated in a certain way, because I know on my computer, I often get the reminders come up saying you haven't backed up for 7 days, and then that skips forward. You haven't backed up for 2 weeks. You haven't backed up for a month. But so it's very good if that's an automated system, isn't it, really?
It is, although I rather suspect that not as many people will be ignoring those warnings from now on.
Well, do you know what? That's exactly what I'm going to do now. After I finish speaking with you, I'm going to plug my time machine into it and back it up. Eric, listen, thanks for talking to me, and hopefully speak again very soon.
That's great. Thanks, Justin.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, N4 Farmers, N4P. At four, always there, Ascent Resources, AST. At three, Greatland Gold, GGP. At two, Mayen Energy, MYN. And the most followed company on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours is an old favourite there, 88 Energy. That's 88E ticker. Okay, top five most liked RNSs on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours were: at five, late yesterday, MySquare, Excise and Warrants and Issue of Equity. At four, Blue Star Capital, that's BLU, Blue, investment update on Satoshi Pay, and Inchin Play that. I'm not investing them, I did have a chunk, I skipped out, but now is an interesting update where Satoshi Pay took a nano payment across blockchain, but now you can top up using PayPal, which is a very interesting development there, and worth keeping an eye on, I think, Blue Star Capital. At three, Sound Energy, SOU, Sidi Mokhtar, a rig arrival and work program. At two, Proxarma, PRX, conclusion of strategic review. And number one, most liked RNS on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours was 88 Energy, and that's 88E. That's the Icewine 2 total depth reached. It's good, total depth. TDR. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciate.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.